of the memoirs. The Persian. In the course of which was serialized, I think, by the Times. In the course of which, he describes a visit by Lady Falkender. She came and she said, oh, I think you're a I'm told you're a very dangerous man. Perhaps I shouldn't have come here at all. Perhaps I'm a lot of flirtation. And this very kind went on. Then she saw a book by me on his table, which he must have acquired simply in order to brief himself about who I was before having me to dinner. She said, oh, I saw Berlin. I think he's rather phony, don't you? Not at all. I don't know what he answered. This was put in a box by the Times. A square box. Which is where I read it. Everybody else read it. Since then, I regard Lady Falkender as an enemy. Yes. I refuse. What I could have done at this dinner party would have been to say, Lady Falkender, why do you think I'm phony? And flirted with all those lines. She would have denied it, and we would have got on very well. I was not prepared for that. I rather like to think. If people do that, I don't. Unforgiving I am. Nick Anderson said you should have forgiven her. You shouldn't have. After all, you're not phony. I'm not so sure, I said. If anyone says nothing nasty about me, I always think the grain of truth. That's what I mean. There's a man called Marshall Cohen. Yeah. Made a very violent attack on me. We tried to make peace. He sent me gramophone records. He came to visit me. No good.
That I could see.
No good.
Because there was in the front something.
Well, it's very personal. Not personal, you asked. Yes. Exactly. You see? Well, I can tell you other things of that sort. There was a deadly American Marxist with the name of... I've forgotten his name. He's some sort of minor Jewish Marxist. Who wrote an article, a review of something I'd written in something called Salma Gundi, which is a periodical produced in
one of
those minor liberal arts colleges.
Yes, I remember. We spoke about
it.
Yes.
And I couldn't remember the word Salma Gundi last time.
Yes.
That is the word. And he made a personal attack. It's a kind of game. I've never met him. I think some name like, I don't know, Marshall Meyer, something like that. I don't know anything about him. Anyway. You see? Some kind of American left-winger. Who's in the internet places. There are other people like that. There's a man called R. Blaster, who is a lecturer in politics in, I don't know, one of these English provincial universities, I can't quite remember which now, Sheffield, I think. He wrote a violent piece about Midsommar.
That's also, he's a leftist.
Very, very strongly leftist.
Yes. He was here in Queens, I think.
He was in Oxford, yes. I met him then. He wanted to say that I changed certain things in my second edition of my essays because the opinion had changed and I wanted to suck up, I wanted to, because originally I was writing during the Cold War period, but then Cold War was over, so I decided to modify opinions, to be, adjust myself to new times that I didn't like very much. He's an enemy.
Now,
these are very minor people. They're all people of a third-rate kind, funnily enough. There are no major figures. Carr was a major figure. But he's about the only one.
But then, coming back to...
I remember minding very much violent criticism, not by of my book of Karl Marx, the New Statesman, by a man called Postgate.
Yes.
Raymond Postgate. Yes, I remember thinking, he must be an enemy.
He was?
I never met him.
Well, but let's come back to, as you mentioned, Air. I mean, people whom you reread their writings, either philosophical or even in literature, that caused you to change your mind, to be disappointed?
No. It's not going to be along these lines. I won't be able to answer these questions. It doesn't happen to me very much. If you ask me specific questions, I can tell you.
Right.
But in general, I don't feel that something's come over, that I no longer believe what I believed then. When I was young, I thought this and that. Well, to some extent, of course, like most people of my sort, I've moved to the right. But, I mean, in the 30s, I mean, I packed puzzles for Spain with great enthusiasm. But my views about Franco never changed. Never. I couldn't go to Spain while he was there. You see? And in a sense, you see, and I wonder if there is one case where I can tell you a change has occurred. And that is about the Russian revolutionary terrorists of the 80s, 70s, 80s, 90s. There were these social revolutionary terrorists who used to shoot wicked governors or threw bombs at people who killed Stolypin or killed some wicked governor of Moscow or killed some minister of the interior, Pleve, and Decima and so on. And the whole life was on their side. As a result of my views about terrorism, I can't help saying I no longer am. On the whole, you see, I have changed my view about revolutionary terrorism. I would not be sympathetic today if I wrote about these people.
And you were sympathetic?
Certainly.
Romantically as a certainly. Child? Or
no, no, politically, politically, historically. Yeah. Not at all romantically as a child. But when someone like Lavrov, who was a famous Russian socialist living abroad, was asked whether he approved of these acts of terrorism, he said, no, I'm against them, but I'm not going to attack them. My hand will not rise against them. In the end, they are brothers. I may be wrong, because our brothers, I never felt that. Since Begin, in 1947, I realized what was happening. That created a break. That in particular, the Irgun, we see, created a retrospective break. I no longer thought of the Russian revolutionists in the same way. That is true.
What was your attitude toward the Irish terrorists in the early 20s?
When George Kennan, 1945, used to tell me how much he disapproved of the Russian terrorists of the 80s, I didn't agree with him. After that, I'm rather closer to his position. What?
But Collins, I mean, the
Irish. Didn't think I thought about them very much. They were not very present to me. But, I mean, my attitude to the IRA, of course, and therefore to Sinn Féin in those days, much more hostile than it would have been.
Now, I have to ask you about a whole group of people. Now, the 1968, are
you tired? Yes, but continue.
If you are tired, so let's...
Well, let's be going off another quarter of an hour.
No, because I don't want to tire you.
Well, but for another quarter of an hour, it makes a difference. Continue. I'll stop you in about 10 minutes' time.
All right. I think that if you are tired...
You want to embark on a new subject?
Yes.
Well, at the end of
the I can ask some small questions and not important ones, but otherwise... I tell you what I wanted to embark on, and we'll discuss it next time. The whole generation of 1968, not the students, but the professors. 20 years passed, people speak about it. I mean, that's a topic that bothers me a lot. It took different shapes here in Europe, in the States. We spoke a little bit about Oxford days, all right. I mean, I can see people explaining the background to what happened in Germany in sociological terms, like Darmdorf likes to do. What bothers me is one thing. I mean, in my opinion, let's say particularly in America, the behavior of the professors, the faculty members, and to a certain extent the intellectuals, in those days, in my opinion, is a test to their intellectual, sometimes integrity, sometimes death.
Who are you thinking of?
No. And I'm thinking about two different kinds of people. A, professors that actually gave in.
Yes, more
to
right.
The faith.
Yes. I know what you mean, yes,
and
more
secondly,
right. Yes.
And more important people, including possibly even Bob Sylvester and others,
yes.
Who tried to join the movement of creating a new philosophy.
Yeah.
Now, everyone knows now that it's nonsense, this new philosophy.
Yes, of course, yes.
I mean, people ought to know it then. But, A, I want to know who among your friends...
How they reacted, and how I reacted to them.
Yes, and whether nowadays, 20 years after, they are able to criticize themselves, because it includes some of the most important minds.
Let's stop here.
All right.